This podcast is sponsored by Canaccord Genuity Wealth Management, award-winning wealth managers who go above and beyond to support and guide you. Visit candowealth.com to start building your wealth with confidence.
Hello and welcome to a special Saturday edition of Coffee House Shots. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. Has the UK reached herd immunity? There have been reports that we're edging there. Fraser, in your Telegraph column, you look at where we are on this, and it's fair to say the phrase herd immunity hasn't always been in vogue. In fact, it's seen as quite toxic.
Yes, in the very early days of the pandemic, you had Patrick Vallance, the chief scientific advisor, using what he thought was fairly uncontroversial language. He was saying the way that epidemics work is that they keep spreading until a country hits herd immunity, and there's nothing you can really do to prevent that. If you lock down, he was saying, you simply delay it so people get hit later on. Now, he was then amazed to find himself accused of a strategy to basically slaughter the elderly. And then Boris Johnson ended up with the same thing. And herd immunity became to be seen to be code for the willful policy of letting anybody over 60 die to protect the economy. So it hasn't been mentioned ever since, but it is back. Now, what I was quite surprised to discover is that the government actually not only does it imagine herd immunity is going to happen in the third quarter of this year, so that is before the end of September, but it also thinks that this is part of the unpublished roadmap. Now, we did a cover this week about the roadmap we all know about. It ends on the 21st of June, when at that point, restrictions and numbers are going to be lifted. But there is a bridge required, as far as the government is concerned, between that point and the herd immunity stage, which will happen, say, by October. So what would you do between the end of the numerical restrictions on gatherings and the beginning of herd immunity? So that is the basis for the current discussion about vaccine passports, about social distancing restrictions. But they don't feel they can say that, because to admit to a herd immunity strategy risks going back into the hot water in which Patrick Vallance was boiled this time last year.
James, is herd immunity a phrase we're only going to hear behind closed doors when it comes to this government?
I think there have been various discussions, I think, about calling it things like community immunity or population immunity to make it sound less alarming as a concept.
Collective immunity, surely. That sounds good.
Sorry?
Collective immunity.
Yeah. But look, I think Fraser is right. I think that there is a kind of odd thing here, which is the government's policy is clearly herd immunity via vaccination. Yet I can't recall anyone saying, when asked what the policy is, but the policy is herd immunity via vaccination. Now, I think Fraser hits upon the kind of crucial point here, which is, when are you certain you've hit herd immunity, and what is your bridging point? I think one of the points that Fraser makes in his piece, Katie, which is something that we've discussed previously, is the uncertainty that surrounds all these debates about COVID. You know, if the herd immunity level is 60%, the ONS antibody survey would suggest that the UK is very close to having hit that, and might even hit that when the next set of numbers come out. If it's 85%, the UK is quite some way away. And I think one of the problems is, because people aren't being clear that the strategy is herd immunity via vaccination, it makes some of this debate about the risks surrounding the Oxford AstraZeneca jab quite hard to understand. I don't think anyone is really proposing that people under 30 be vaccinated for their own personal safety against COVID. It's more that the hope is that by them being vaccinated, you make it more likely that you as a population as a whole achieve immunity. And so people are comparing the direct risk of COVID to the direct risk of the vaccine, which I think makes the risk of the vaccine sound greater than it actually is, because people aren't the principal reason for vaccinating under 30-year-olds in public policy terms is not about the risk to them posed by COVID.
Fraser, the government, as James touched on, hasn't been very clear when it comes to its strategy, but we have seen a hint earlier this week when they were talking about vaccinations for the young after the change in the AstraZeneca guidance, where they suggest, you're not just doing it for you, you're doing it for other people. So do you think we are edging towards almost the ethos of herd immunity, even if the government is going to use that exact phrase?
Yes, I think time and time again, the government is now tripping itself up because of its failure to level with people, its failure to be candid with us. I think it's got itself into a mindset where it thinks it can only communicate through sort of three-word podium slogans, and that anything more, if you can't fit it on a slogan, the public won't understand it. Now, that strategy might have been useful during the crisis when hospitals were in danger of being overrun. But now that we're past that stage, now that deaths in the UK are now 99% below their peak, excess deaths have stopped, we're now seeing fewer people die every week than is normal for the last 5-year average. So now that we're past the emergency stage, we ought to have a different kind of conversation where people are given the truth, they're given the doubt. And we saw a little bit with the AstraZeneca blood clot debate earlier on this week. People were able to take a calculated risk, thinking, yes, there is a risk from getting the blood clot, but there's also a risk from getting COVID, a risk from passing on COVID. It's a balance of risk. Now, this kind of rational language, a balance of risk, is something which I've long wanted to hear in the COVID debate. We tend to be just told or hammered home one message from posters, look him in the eyes and tell him you can't stay at home. It's been that sort of fear messaging, rather than trying to tell people, look, it's a difficult balance here and this is what we're trying to achieve. And I think that candor will be necessary for young people. Now, I also think it's almost like during election times where governments think that nobody does anything unless for their own selfish interests. So at election times, pensioners get bribed, for example. And young people right now are being told either A, take it for your own good, which is difficult to stack up, really, when you look at how low the risk is to young people from COVID, or they're being vaguely threatened with vaccine passports, saying if you don't take the jab, you'll never see the inside of a nightclub again. I don't think either of those strategies are working. What I would think would be working is if you'd say to people, look, we need you to take this to help us stop the spread, not for your own sake, but you might pass it on to somebody you care about, you might pass it on in general. So if in effect, take the jab for the good of your country, because we need to build up these herd immunity numbers. There will be a way of making that debate. And I think that after the year we've just had, people in this country can now handle the truth.
James, when it comes to herd immunity, as we're saying, that's the government's unspoken aim. But if you look at that social distancing review, it had a caveat in it saying that no vaccine is 100%. So even once all adults have been offered or had both their jabs, there is a chance you might still need some social distancing measures. Is that because they're not sure if they've reached herd immunity? Or could, for example, Michael Gove decide that the country has reached herd immunity, but yet we still need some precautions?
I think the answer to that question goes like this. There's a kind of a very crude equation that Patrick Vallance and other government advisors like to do, which is you times the efficacy rate of the vaccine by the number of people who've taken it, and that tells you what the level of immunity is, the true percentages. Now, I think that there's still not quite certainty yet on how effective a vaccine is at stopping people from becoming infected at all and therefore passing it on. But I think the good news is that the vaccines look to be more effective on that front than the models had anticipated, and quite considerably so. And uptake of the vaccine, again, looks to be higher than the modellers had expected. I think there's quite an interesting YouGov poll out in the Times today showing that the change in people's attitudes towards the safety of the Oxford-AstraZeneca vaccine is within the margin of error, despite this week's announcements. So I personally think that what we are probably heading to is some bridging measures between June 21st and the end of this year. And then I think a return to kind of pre-COVID normality.
Fraser, do you think that's what we're heading towards? I mean, you could argue if we're reaching herd immunity in the autumn, you wouldn't need measures through the winter. But the government do seem very worried about the NHS being overwhelmed, whether that's from COVID or flu.
Yeah, and this, of course, is the puzzle. I mean, when we hit herd immunity, if we hit herd immunity, we're not going to get any announcements. No bell is going to ring. We won't know. And the as James was saying, that Chris Whitty likes to come up with this immunity figure by using a certain sort of pessimistic way. You multiply the number of vaccines by the efficacy. But there are so many ways of calculating how much population immunity there is right now. The ONS says 55% antibodies, but do you add T-cell immunity to that using Public Health England figure? Bristol University thinks we'll hit herd immunity mid-August. That's according to its PCCF model. There's a study from UCL, the Daily Telegraph published this, saying we're going to hit herd immunity on Monday. So there are so many estimates of this, and all you can do is guess. With COVID, it depends on so many things. It depends on, for example, the R0 number, the natural reproduction number. Is it 2.5? Is it 4.5? There is such a wide range of estimates that I'm not sure anybody will be able to say with confidence when we have got to herd immunity. The only thing we can do, I think, is to look at the infection numbers and the death numbers and try to learn from those. For example, we sent kids back to school recently. The models expected there'd be quite a significant uptick in cases. That was not the case. So if we get the next reopening is on the 17th of April, when that happens, will there be an uptake? Then you've got the 17th of May, when we can have the rule of 30 coming in. Will we see an uptick in cases after that? If we don't, then that might tell us a bit more about how much immunity there probably is. But you simply can't test for it. I mean, a lot of people who are naturally immune will not have antibodies because antibodies wane. They're still protected because the T cell will kick in. But antibody tests can only show you part of the picture. Nothing can show you the whole picture with confidence. Therefore, no minister will ever be able to say with confidence that we have hit herd immunity. I remember people were saying that about London back in the summer, that cases have died down in London because London has hit herd immunity. In fact, London went on to see a second wave almost as big as the first wave, even though its deaths now are pretty much down to zero. So I think with COVID, the one thing you know about it is that it keeps surprising you. That's why the theory of keeping restrictions going until we hit herd immunity in October, it makes sense. But in practice, you can certainly see the case why these vaccine identity cards, if they're used, if the social distancing would keep on going right through the winter, simply because you never can tell. That's the only moral we've drawn so far from COVID. It keeps confounding the best experts.
And James, finally, when it comes to achieving herd immunity, one thing that's been talked about in the past is child vaccination. But when we're looking at those warnings on blood clots, clearly being advised against in terms of the Oxford vaccine for the 20-somethings, but we've also saw a child vaccine trial frozen, put on pause. Do you think it's unlikely now that the government is going to pursue child vaccination, given what we've been hearing on blood clots?
I think the problem with child vaccination is it has the same, even greater example of the problem that vaccinating under 30s does. You really are doing this for the benefit of society as a whole, not for the benefit of the individual child that you're vaccinating. And so I think as Chris Whitty said, ethically that gets complicated. My hunch is that in terms of child vaccination, the UK will not be the first country to go down that route. Anthony Fauci in the US has talked about child vaccination trials there and moving quickly. I think this is one of those ones where people will be reluctant to be the first country to attempt it. I think you might see, for example, you know, you might see people doing over 16s. I think that would feel slightly different to people from doing like 5 to 11-year-olds. So I suspect that this week the prospect of kids being vaccinated in the autumn when they go back to school has receded a fair amount.
Thank you, James. Thank you, Fraser. And thank you for listening.